So we are on the last part of this series on interpreting the 23rd Psalm. And I started working on the...
Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
Workshop that I'm going to do at Capon Springs, which is metaphysics, the language of unity. And to do that, I went to the bottom of my bookshelf where I have all of the stuff I've collected over the years, and some of it is the original metaphysics that was taught in Unity that came straight from Charles Fillmore. And, how I got the copy that I have of it, or the copies, is you heard me talk about Ed Rabel, the living mystic in Unity. And when I first met him, I went into his office and was talking about how awed I was by what he taught. I mean, the class I took with him, must have been 70 or 80 people in the class, and he walks in and he goes, "My name is Ed Rabel. This is basic metaphysics. I don't teach basic metaphysics. If you want to learn basic metaphysics, take that book, go home and read it. If you want to learn advanced metaphysics, this is what we do in this class." So I went and I talked with him, and he said, "How can I, you know, become as astute as you in metaphysics?" And he went and he took his books that he had put handwritten notes in them and gave them to me and said, "Go home and study these." So that's what was on the bottom of my shelf that I dug out to start working with creating the workshop at Capon Springs. And it helped me to really understand the real essence of unity and the real basics of metaphysics. Sometimes in Unity, we've kind of gotten away from the real elements of Charles Fillmore because, as you heard me say before, you know, if you want to learn about the works of Carl Jung, for example, it's easier to read people who wrote about Carl Jung than it is to read Carl Jung, right? Or even in, you know, the field of photography, you heard me say that Ansel Adams, who was the creator of the zone system in photography, but to read his original works is so dense that it's easier to read works, people who wrote about his works, you know. So that's the same that has sort of happened in Unity, is that we have sort of reinterpreted Fillmore's works so it's easier to understand. But it's really, I love going back and reading those original works of those original teachers. Frank Giudice was another. I found his books that I have. And he, those are people, when I went to Unity Village, I was studying with people who were out on the outer fringes of actually having studied with Charles Fillmore. That was back in the 80s, in the early 80s. So anyway, I just say all that to say that I really understand the essence of doing something like going through the 23rd Psalm to try to really understand the real essence of what it's trying to share with us. So for the last time in terms of this series, I will do what I've been doing for the last 5 weeks, and I'll begin by reading the 23rd Psalm, and those who know it and want to say it with me, please do. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. And yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." All right. So the verse that we're going to study, of course, today is, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." So, the key in that particular verse is after the first word, "surely." All right? This is a word you use when you are absolutely confident and sure about what it is you are declaring. All right? And the psalmist moved through a profound transformation from the time that he began this song to the time he completed it. And we talked about that a lot last week, about his own transformation. Okay, so, you know, we're reading it as if he sat down and just wrote this, okay, but and then finished it and published it. But we could see as we're studying it that he was being transformed as he was creating this particular psalm. And he gave emphasis to the evidence that had been transformed by the experience of creating this psalm, and the evidence is in that word, surely. Okay? So how do we get to that place in our own consciousness where we can proclaim, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So let's examine for a moment the fact that we have spent the past 5 weeks translating Bible scripture that many of us have known all of our lives and probably did not comprehend what it was really telling us. And even at this point, after studying it for 5 weeks, still do not comprehend the total depth of the meaning that's hidden in that particular psalm. So, you know, the key, you might ask the question, you know, why is that? Why is the depth of truth hidden in Scripture? Okay. Well, it's not that the truth is hidden. It's more that our ability to recognize the truth when we hear it and when we see it has become dull from lacking the idea of looking for the truth. Okay. And from focusing our attention on things that are not true and believing that they are true. Did everybody just get that? All right. And this is how Jesus explained it in Matthew 13:15. He said, "For the hearts of this people have become dull, and they are hard of hearing, and they have shut their eyes so they would not see with their eyes or hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn to me so that I can heal them." Who's he talking about? Us. All right? So, but, you know, we have to do, you know, what we've discovered in this psalm from this, you know, by looking at it, we're studying what is called a statement of truth. Okay, so this psalm is a statement of truth. And as you study a statement of truth, it begins to recondition your mind and open your eyes and open your ears and prepare you for the truth when you hear it and see it. So the very fact that we have studied this psalm together means that over the past 5 weeks, we have been reconditioning ourselves. Is everybody with me? Okay, so the more time you spend studying truth, the more you are reconditioning yourself and opening up your spiritual ears and your spiritual eyes. But Jesus also explained in Matthew 13:12, the nature of how spiritual understanding works. He said, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away from them." Now that sounds harsh. Exactly. Okay. All right. But you also, I would have to remember, it sounds like Jesus is talking to people, but he's really talking to consciousness. Right? He's not talking to individuals. He's talking to consciousness. So when Jesus said, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven," he's referring to serious truth students, like those of you who are sitting here and listening on the internet. And when he said, and to them it has not been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, he's referring to people that even though they live a you know, sort of a good and decent life, studying and learning the deeper truths is not important to them. You get it? All right, it's sort of like when Pam and I were closing on our house, remember 19 years ago, and we were sitting there waiting for the title people and all that, and somebody says, "What do you do?" And we talked about unity. He says, "What does unity believe?" And we said, "You know, unity is a religion that helps people to find God within and know that we are responsible for the evolution of our consciousness." And he said, "Yeah, I'm glad I'm Baptist. We just let somebody else do that for us." So the idea here is what Jesus is getting at is that, you know, when you're seeking the ideas of the kingdom of heaven, you are given more. But if you're not seeking it, the sort of slight desire you have, that begins to fade away from you. Okay? So then that's what you said, for him, but to him who has more, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from him who has not, even what he has will fade away. And again, this means if you have devoted yourself to discovering and learning the deeper truths, the Holy Spirit will give you even more desire to learn and understand. But if you have no interest or no devotion to studying and understanding the deeper truths, the little desire that you have begins to fade away. Okay? So it has nothing to do with, you know, if you got a lot of money, we'll give you more money. If you got none, we're going to take it. It has nothing to do with that. It all has to do with your consciousness and your desire. So the statement, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, is referring to the devoted truth student. And as we said before, this statement from the 23rd Psalm is not an affirmation. It is a statement of truth. And when proclaimed by an individual, it's a realization of a new level of consciousness. So when you reach a point where you say, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, you are demonstrating a higher level of consciousness. Is everybody following me? Okay. And this is a new level of commitment to developing a relationship with your own indwelling Christ Spirit. So this whole idea that we want to find God, okay, the problem with that is that God is not lost. Okay? There is no finding God. What there is an awakening to the fact of the individualization of this divine presence within yourself. So you're really seeking to find the true self, all right? And we're only lost to that because we have not been paying attention to that, okay? So the problem for many of us is making this type of statement, this level of commitment, is it requires that we break the gridlock of familiarity enjoyed and treasured by the ego and step out on complete faith that this statement is our true reality. So that's what's happening to us right now. We are locked into who we are. How do I let go of who I am? You with me? Like you've heard me say 100 times, people say, well, if I become spiritual, well, I know who I am. Okay? You'll know the true self. And that's what we're striving for. And so knowing this true self can get you to that place of being able to say surely. And that often requires, it's quite a challenge. It's a challenge to let go of that aspect of ourselves that we're locked into. And it's a challenge because it's easy and comfortable and somewhat safe just to remain as we are. Okay? And I believe we have unconsciously convinced ourselves that we can somehow become spiritual and at the same time remain as we are. Right? I mean, think about it. Okay? And it's a trap. It's the gridlock of being mesmerized by the notion of being spiritual, while at the same time wanting the safety, ease, and comfort of remaining as we are. You know, it's sort of like the intellectual thing of saying, I am spiritual. But especially, you know, when we had the problem is we have no clue really as to what it means to be spiritual. So we rather stay with what's convenient. All right? And all we know is that spiritual consciousness is supposed to be very much different from ego consciousness, but we don't really understand what that's all about. Okay? Our dilemma is that we are reaching for what seems to be the spiritual ideal while at the same time having no idea what that idea is supposed to be. Who am I supposed to be when I'm spiritual? You know, we have no idea what that is, okay? But I know who I am now, so I'll stick with that, okay? So our dilemma, or our to be diligent in this process, we have to really begin to understand how the spiritual process works. We have to understand that what we are doing a lot of times is we're subconsciously sabotaging our own effort, because to move to a higher level of consciousness closer to that of being truly spiritual may be something that we can't quite comprehend. So your imagination without comprehension makes it difficult to allow yourself to move to higher levels of consciousness. You're saying to yourself, I want to be in a higher level of consciousness, but I can't comprehend what that's like. You can't even hardly imagine what it's like. Now, we'll look at the Buddha and other people like that, and we'll go, ooh. But we still can't quite imagine what it is like to be there. So to make the process more elusive, I believe we are under the illusion that by gaining more spiritual knowledge, we become more spiritual by the virtue of that knowledge. And remember, I told you about the martial arts movie I was watching. And again, I shared this with my students the first time. This is the first week of class. You know, after the first day, they're all like, who the heck is that? All right? You know, we went through this. I wanted to show, they asked a question. And I wanted to show them the first two levels of consciousness. You know, the seven levels, with the highest level being the Christ. So I showed them the first two levels to answer the question that they had asked. And I think it has something to do with, are we like we are because of how we are individually or because we are caught up in a collective consciousness? A student asked that question. All right? So I gave them the first two levels. And then Darnell sitting in the corner goes, what's level three? I gave him level three. A few minutes go by. He goes, what's level four? Right? So I said, well, that's enough for right now. He goes, nah, man. He says, because I can see myself at level four. So I want to kind of understand where I'm supposed to be going. Right? But isn't that powerful for these young kids? You know, I mean, they want to know. They want to know. Right? So, again, so this idea of trying to understand that when we gain it. I lost my track of thought. So what I said to them was what I had said to you last week or the week before, that knowledge without experience is purely an illusion. All right? So we can have all this spiritual knowledge, but if we are not practicing it in our everyday lives, to us, it's just an illusion. And that's the problem we have with trying to become spiritual, is we're trying to do it without actually practicing it, okay, in every situation in our lives, all right? So in this idea about gaining more knowledge, basically what it does, it just puts us in a state where we get to a point where we say, well, he or she is not at the same level that I'm at because I've got more knowledge, and right? And don't raise your hand. I know some of us have done that. Or at least thought it, okay? So, you know, and what we're saying is this person doesn't have as much knowledge as we believe we have, but again, knowledge alone without practice and mastery does not necessarily elevate you to a higher level of consciousness. Why? Because in reality, it just feels much safer and easier and more comfortable to just be in the world the way we always have and to react to the world the way we always have. And that's the key. Because what happens? You gain this greater knowledge and you watch the news or something happens to you. And again, you respond the way you've always responded, not stopping to think, wait a minute, the knowledge that I have says that there is another way for me to be in this situation. You get it? Okay? And so it's a process where you've always got to look for opportunity to practice your knowledge, and life is constantly giving you those opportunities. Because you got to remember, this is the earth classroom, right? If you study higher mystical knowledge, they say that spirits who really want to evolve, they volunteer to come to the earth boot camp because this is where it really happens, all right? So it means that everyone sitting here at one time says, I want to go. So now you're here. What are we doing about it, right? All right? But as we have, you know, all probably said, or thought at one time or another, you know, when we think about ourselves trying to evolve and the way we react to life, we probably all at one time or another said, this is just the way I am, okay? But we don't want to stay here. That is why our experiences at their root are basically the same, even though on the surface they may appear to be different. You know, we gain new information, but we still react to the people in our lives and the challenges in our lives and the way we always have. The reason for that, you know, you may ask why, is because what we love doesn't change very much. And what we fear doesn't change very much, unless something monumental or catastrophic happens to cause us to come face to face with the truth about ourselves and how we are showing up in the world. Is everybody hearing that? Okay. So what we, you know, as truth students are striving for is to allow the knowledge and information we are learning about our what we call our spiritual self, to move us to a higher level of consciousness. But that takes a willingness to break free of the comfort zone of familiarity and the courage to release all the ego's beliefs and behaviors that keeps us at our present level of consciousness. So that means that everything you believed and everything that you find yourself tied into in terms of opinions and all that, you have to let go of all of that and just learn how to be. What did your ego just say when I said that? You know what I'm saying? You just have to learn how to be. Things are neither good or bad. Things just are, okay? Just like God is. I tell you, many probably haven't heard the story when I handed in a paper in grad school in the Synoptic Gospel class. You know, a PhD professor, he's a Jungian psychologist. And I handed in a paper, and in it I had God is. And he wrote back, God is what? You know, he lets you... Yeah, I'll give you an A if you can answer that question, right? But, you know, for us, God is, okay? So this idea about learning more about our spiritual self, that's what we're striving for. How do I really understand who the essence of my being is and begin to understand that everything that is happening in my life is designed to get me to that place, okay? However, it is possible to affect change on purpose without having to wait for a monumental or catastrophic situation to happen. It's a slower process, and it requires deliberate, disciplined action and a conscious commitment to change. This process is based on your dedication and willingness to be changed at the core of your being. And as the psalmist explained, you have to be at that place where surely I am ready to be changed. Okay? You've got to get to that place where in your heart you really feel that. And as much as we'd like to discover another way to evolve spiritually, it keeps coming back to learning how to love each other and serve each other no matter what the circumstance. All right? And as hard as we, you know, try, we cannot escape the penalty we inflict on ourselves when we do not obey the commandment expressed by Jesus in Mark 12:30, which is... You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. And the second is you shall love all the people in your life and you shall love yourself. That is the key to evolving spiritually. Okay? And to do that, to be mentally and emotionally prepared to love and to serve no matter what the circumstance, takes a spiritual preparation and spiritual conditioning to develop the spiritual discipline to be an instrument of peace and love. An instrument, all right? The St. Francis prayer. And as we learn in these 6 weeks of study in the 23rd Psalm, to walk through the valley of the shadow of death and fear no evil, we must come to know, really know, that surely the divine presence is always with me. And we must know it with all of our heart, with all of our mind, with all of our soul, with all of our strength. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Sure, because most of the time when we say that, we use the word surely, but we're really thinking hopefully. Am I right? Okay. Surely is a whole nother dynamic. It's a whole nother level of consciousness. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And to get to that place where you know in your heart, your mind, your soul, your body that thou art with me takes dedicated, disciplined, conscious, practiced awareness that thou art with me. No matter what is going on, you know thou art with me. It's a conscious process. You're always awake. And again, as I share with my students, and I'll tell you, they were listening because by the end of the class, they said, we know by the end of this semester, we will be awake. Because I said to them that this class is not really about marketing. It's about helping you to wake up. All right? And they got it. You know what? When I say that to them, they look at me like, oh, yeah, that's what I want. I mean, you could see it. They're leaning forward. They want to, you know, take the thing out of their ears and turn their phones off. I mean, they want to know, how am I going to wake up? Okay? And so that's the essence of the process about, you know, waking up to the fact that there is a dynamic force that's always active in my life and affairs. And as I'm interacting with you, I know it's active in your life and affairs. Okay? There's this incredible process that's going on in the universe that connects every one of us as one dynamic movement. Okay? So just, you know, just like it takes a strong body and mind to move to the next level of physical performance, it takes a strong mind, heart, and spirit to move to the next level of spiritual performance and to live in a spiritually principled life. And that is the basis of why we are here. That being to gain new knowledge, but also to learn how to practice and live that truth until it becomes the way your mind, your body, your emotions perform. It is our goal to become a demonstration of truth, not by what we say, but how we naturally show up in the world. And you know, it's interesting too, if you really practice this information, the things we're studying, you all of a sudden wake up and realize that you're in a different space. You get it? It's not like a catastrophic thing. It's just you just kind of realize you're in a different space. I mean, I've noticed that all through this shoulder rehab that I went through. I'd be working at something, working at it. All of a sudden, I've realized that I could reach to that top shelf in the cabinet. I didn't know I could do that before. All right? I started taking it. I'm in my next level. The 20th of this month of my second year anniversary of that surgery. So I'm going to the next level of rehab, which is Bikram yoga, all right? And in Bikram yoga, I mean, that's a little bit challenging. And I told Pam, I looked in the mirror and said, who is that old man practicing yoga? I said, oh, shoot, that's me, right? Right? And in Bikram yoga, and I told them when I went in, I got this thing on my shoulder and with my back. I mean, my back can go out just by tying my shoes. And I told them, you know, and so they're good because they come around and they show you what to do to work within your limits. But as I keep going, I find out little by little, I'm able to do the next thing, move a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? Okay? And so it's like the dedication to the process. So the same thing with the spiritual process, it's little by little, all of a sudden you realize you're in a different space than you were before. But you've got to be committed to it. Okay, you've got to be committed to the process. And in the last line of this psalm, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, to dwell in God's house is to live in constant conscious awareness of God's presence in your life and affairs. To live in God's house is to constantly monitor your thoughts, feelings, and emotions for activity that is not appropriate for God's house. Did everybody hear that? Okay? So you're always saying to yourself, what I am doing now, is this the right thing to be doing, thinking, being in God's house? Because I said that I would dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I will dwell in the consciousness that thou art with me. So I have to be conscious of what I'm doing, saying, being. And Dr. Hawkins, some of you might remember several years ago, we looked at Dr. Hawkins' books on power versus force. He explains that on a scale of a low of 20, which represents shame, to a high of 1,000, which represents enlightenment, most people are functioning at the level of 200. If you desire to get to the level of 250, which is a level of neutrality, where you are able to release and let go of negative energy, you must monitor your thoughts and feelings to determine if you have neutralized your fears, your anger, your resentment, your prejudices, your idiosyncratic negative reactions to others and to life. And if you haven't, you will still be at the realm of 200, where negative attractors can easily pull you down into false pride, anger, grief, apathy, and below. But what this means is that you have a lot of work to do. That's why Jesus said, my Father's working and I am working. Okay? So level of 200 is, in his scale, is a level where you are at a consciousness where you can begin to manage and understand your negative emotions. Okay? Whereas lower than that, you are just in it. If you're an angry person, you are just at anger. You're angry all the time. If you are, you know, apathetic, whatever, you're just caught up in those. But when you get to 200, according to scale, you can make those decisions. You can balance yourself between falling below and moving forward, okay? But if you're not staying conscious, those negative attractors will easily pull you right back down into them, their levels of being. Does that make sense? Okay? So due to the fact that our ego does not enjoy this work, let's be honest. The ego doesn't enjoy this work. It's so much easier to turn on TV, get a bag of chips, and just chill. Okay? This takes work all of the time. So since the ego does not enjoy this work, we must continuously remind ourselves that we have work to do. So when you feel a negative attractor come up, you know, anger or fear or whatever it must be, it's to say to yourself, oh, that's a negative attractor. I got work to do. You get it? All right? I've got work to do. Otherwise, as it says in the scripture, if you don't stay conscious of that and realize you have work to do, as we read, it says, our hearts will grow dull, our ears will become heavy of hearing, and our eyes will close so that we will not be able to see and perceive with our eyes and hear with our ears and understand with our hearts and turn to the Christ to heal us. So when you stay conscious, when you're aware, you can say to the Christ within you, I'm struggling with this. I need your help. I need your help. All right? As one student said to me the first day, she's an older student in the class, she says, hi, my name is Kimmy. I'm retired and I'm disabled. So I let her say what she had to say. And I said, okay, Kimmy, for your sake and for the class's sake, I want you to introduce yourself again. She says, hi, my name is Kimmy. I'm retired. What else did I say? Yeah, but something before that. Anyway, I'm retired and I said, that's it. She said, what? I said, that's it. I don't want you to introduce yourself ever again as being disabled. Okay? And she got it. And the class got it. You get what I'm saying? And this is what we do. We introduce ourselves with all of our idiosyncratic stuff. Okay? Even if we don't verbalize it, somehow we project it. So we want to understand, you know, we want to open our eyes, open our ears, and listen for the Christ, where the Christ is always giving us guidance as to how to respond and be in any situation. We want to be the ones that Jesus was referred to when he said, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. And truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you see and did not see it, and hear what you hear but did not hear it. And I'm going to end by sharing this affirmation that you can work with this coming week. I am not where I want to be, but I am far from where I used to be. And I'm looking forward for what God has in store for me. Amen.